Down to Business with Bobby Kerr on News Talk.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland.
So, I told you we're going to introduce you to our business review panel. They're here in the shape of Declan Ralph of BWG Foods, that's Spar, Mace and XL brands, and journalist and author Valerie Cox also joins us. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Bobby.
Now, Valerie, bad news from a consumer point of view. September fuel hikes to go ahead, but other rises are likely to be parked. What's going on here? This is the season of kite flying and all that.
Well, it is, but it's very much not good news. Motorists are going to have an increase on September the 1st. Taxes charged on fuel is going to bring diesel above €2 a litre. And then we're expecting another series of rises in the coming months. But the good news is they're probably going to be held off. That would be about 8 cents a litre, something like that. I don't think, you know, we're never going to go back to the way things were, even with the subsidies that the government is putting in. But the increase, you know, and the increase in diesel is there, plus the levy, the 2 cent levy coming back is really what's going to cause the problem. Now, the author here, Aisling Maloney, has all sorts of quotes from various people. And I mean, one of them is somebody said, a government spokesperson said, Taoiseach Micheál Martin and Taoiseach Simon Harris would continue to engage in the time ahead as the situation evolves. Well, Bobby, that's their job. That's what they're supposed to be doing. Like, they're not being, you know, benefactors going to save us a few bob here, you know. Obviously, we're not going to go back to April, I think, where we had all the fuel protests and closure of roads and O'Connell Street being closed off.
I think they're probably mindful of that, though, in the context of all this, that they don't want this to blow up in their face. Declan, I don't know if you'd agree.
I would agree, Bobby. Yeah, I think they are probably mindful of that. There's a big cost to this, of course, as well. It's cost so far probably about €1 billion.
Yeah.
And sort of putting that in context, it was 3.3 billion with the energy credits that they did over the, you know, when at the start of the Ukraine-Russia situation.
It's given these things out is relatively straightforward. Taking them back.
That's the hard
thing, isn't it? Bread is forgotten.
Yeah, easily forgotten. And it would be very difficult to bring it back.
And the numbers, as you say, are big.
They are, but that €2 price point for diesel or petrol, it's a psychological price point, really, that we want to keep it under, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Old foxes such as Willie O'D are in there saying that they should be very cautious about restoring those excise duties on September the 1st, as the situation in the Middle East is extremely volatile. And we're 168 days now of war. Since US President Trump began firing missiles at Iran. Like, I don't think there was an expectation that we were going to be still here.
I don't think so, Bobby.
168 days in, but we are.
Speaking of old foxes, Michael Healy-Rae is still there. Like, he obviously resigned here because of all of this from government.
Yeah.
And also, although he throws a little bone back this time. He says the Irish government, no matter who they are, cannot cushion us from the effect of the war on an ongoing basis. So maybe he's looking to come back in the back door there or something.
Now, I don't know if you recall Cairns or Point, but I know Valerie Cox was there all those years ago listening to Christy Moore and waving her anti-nuclear badge. But the front page of the Irish Times, Valerie, tells us that the Energy Authority are studying nuclear options. Now, it's a little vague on what the study actually is. They're referencing some model in Finland, which began operating in 2024 as a potential case study. I don't know what that is, but I think maybe nuclear power has moved on from the days of Cairns or Point. Has it?
I don't think it has really, yeah. Bobby. I mean, it is one solution. And the government originally drew up these plans in 1968, which was actually, you know, quite far-seeing at the time. But then they realised, of course, after Cairns saw that, you know, public pressure was very, very much against them, and they dropped the whole idea. Now, they actually made it, they banned nuclear power.
It's in the Constitution.
Yeah, it's in the Constitution.
Yeah.
So in order to even, you know, think about this, really, they've given the Fianna Fáil TD, James O'Connor, he he's got the party backing to draw up a bill rescinding the law banning nuclear power. So they had to do that before they go on with anything else. So this is more a white paper, that's what they're calling it, by the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland to have a look at it. And they have looked at this Finnish model. Now, apparently it's a small modular reactor type. And, you know, not one of the huge things that they've had in the past. But, you know, I have visited some of these nuclear power plants as part of my work. And they're the most depressing places you could imagine. And, I mean, we're all familiar with Chernobyl. But, apart from that, even, you go and you stand in these acres and acres of buildings where they have silence and green pools full of decomposing the steel
casings, the rods,
yeah. And, you know, it is very scary because what you're actually doing is you're not dealing with the present situation. You're dealing with, yes, producing energy, but then you're dealing with the lifelong commitment. And these things have, you know, millions and millions of years, or certainly thousands, of being active. And that is the scary part. And I don't think the world has yet managed to deal with that safely.
Yeah, I don't know your thoughts, Declan. We don't know what this Finnish, I don't certainly, what this Finnish case study is. But I assume technology here has moved considerably from the days that Valerie and I are reminiscing to there.
You would think so, although from this article it's not clear what that case study is. It's not going to happen too quickly. And I mean, these things obviously take time to plan and to build, and you've got to try and make the right decisions here. I mean, the white paper that Valerie mentioned is not due till 2027, the end of 2027. And, you know, if we are going to go the nuclear route, and it's unclear yet because there's a decarbonized electricity system study, the DESS, which they're talking about here, and that has sort of 10 options in it. And nuclear is one of those. But if we were to go the nuclear route, Bobby, it would be 2040. Or 2055, they're saying, by the time we might have. The earlier date being the smaller one, the later date being the more conventional plant. So
nothing to see here, Valerie. Nothing to see here.
No, but also I think, you know, we've got to take into consideration climate change. And even during the week, the German government had to close down one of their plants because the Rhine water level had gone so low they couldn't service the plant. Yeah. So, I mean, we're coming into a new era where all of this stuff is very important.
Absolutely, it is. Yeah. Declan, Irish Continental Group, Eamon Rothwell, led business, the ferry company. Management buyout undervalues ferry operator by 39%. So a shareholder says, seems to be a management buyout taking place here. One that was attempted previously 19 years ago by Eamon Rothwell. Seems to be able to, as I understand the structure of the company now, that this is something that will be just driven home. Some minority shareholders having some issue with it and benchmarking performance against other ferry companies and saying that they're not getting fair value for their buck.
Yeah, it's the company you're referring to there is Onks Capital, and they said that there's unnecessary urgency about this. They're giving out about it being done in the August holiday period, so the small shareholders can't get together and can't, you know, put all their ideas into one sort of force to go against this. But, you know, on the other hand is that the offer would see shareholders paid €8 per share, which is a 28% premium to the closing price on July the 24th. And the offer was made just within an hour and a half of half an hour of the closing on that day.
Yeah.
So there's sort of two sides to the story here, Bobby. I think as well, you're right in terms of they're saying that based on other infrastructural or key sort of transport infrastructural deals, that it is undervalued by that 39%. But there is also the ISS, who are an influential shareholder advisory firm. They're saying that it's a good deal and provides an attractive premium and will give immediate liquidity and certainty of value to the shareholders. So there's a few different views here. But I think as you're right, I think it looks like Eamon Rothwell will probably, with his 21.7% of the business, he'll probably drive this through.
Yeah, he's also part of the management team.
Yeah.
Okay, indeed. Well, more to see there. Corporation tax, Valerie, up 500% in 20 years. So we're told by Sinan Brennan in today's Irish Examiner, up from 5.5 million to a billion to 34.7 billion, 500%. Amazing that so much money could have accumulated over the 20-year period.
Absolutely. And it comes mainly, of course, from taxation income from the big tech firms. And if you compare it, I mean, just for comparison's sake, if you look at the take last year from income tax, that was just 36.6 billion. So, you know, it's not too far off that. It's interesting because most of the corporation tax, it is, of course, regarded as a volatile tax. I mean, it's not as secure as income tax, and it can actually be affected by the performance of a small number of firms, which is exactly what we've seen in this country. Multinational companies, the areas they're based in even, most of the corporation tax take is concentrated in Cork and Dublin, and that, of course, is where the multinationals are situated. So, you know, it's an interesting one. But our exchequer revenue at this stage, I mean, it's dependent on both income tax and corporation tax. And there's been a shift in the growth in the total net receipts. But also, we've got to look at, I think it's a warning sign almost for the stability and the risk profile of the tax base.
Yeah. Declan, if you compare it to the, I suppose, the overall tax, that's gone from 40 billion to 107, which is 171% of an increase. So it just shows that pro rata with a 500% increase,
yeah,
that corporation tax is now a much bigger player in the overall tax pool. Also, as Valerie said there, you know, the 13 billion in 2024 came from just three companies.
It's a scary kind of statistic when you read that out loud, because it is disproportionately contributing to the exchequer, if you like, but from three companies. So, you know, a decision made in a boardroom in California somewhere could impact the country, even if one of those was to change. That would be a third of the 13 billion. So it's a significant amount of money and a significant reliance on a small number of companies. So it is one that we have to be concerned about.
Yeah, and it's good to see it highlighted there in today's Examiner. Now, Valerie, I don't know what your thoughts are on two things. One, I suppose the dereliction of properties. The other is a focus on a town maybe not so far from your own home place in Bray, County Wicklow. But really, the Irish Times have given a commitment now that they're going to be running a whole survey around what's causing dereliction. They're looking at a number of counties, and the first report is out from Bray, and it really does bring out some quite alarming statistics about who's registered, what's registered, who collects it, and there are some kind of concerning stats in there, are there not?
Yeah, very, very concerning. First of all, let me say this is obviously going to be a great series. This first article is written by Ronan McGreevy, and it's very, very impressive. I mean, the amount of work he's done. We all know there's a derelict sites register in every council. And what really shocked me was he went and looked at the one for Wicklow, and there's actually only four sites on the derelict sites register. Now, that can be for all kinds of reasons, but mostly because nobody's got their act together and sorted it out. I mean, if you look at Bray, which is, I mean, Bray is a huge town, one of the biggest towns in the country at this
stage. I think the 10th biggest town in the country.
Yeah. And it's almost two towns. The seafront area has been looked after, lots of business, lots of buzz, absolutely great. Although he points out that the Victorian shelters need some work. Bray is a great town if you go to the seafront. But the central main street in Bray is an absolute disgrace. And one of the examples he takes here, Ronan McGreevy takes, is that Simon Harris's office, this is a man now who's giving out about local authorities, saying they're not doing enough to tackle the scourge of dereliction. But there are two buildings either side of his own office in Bray, the old Shoe Zone store.
So they're probably the two on the list then, that are mentioned.
So, you know, it's quite ridiculous. Now, he did say that the revenue commissioners were taking over collecting the derelict sites tax instead of the local authority. But I mean, we're waiting for him to do it. It's an absolutely It's just so slow. I mean, what can be done with these places? The problem is, and the editorial in the Irish Times points this out very well, regeneration can happen, but it's not going to happen in the way that we know these towns. We've got the growth of online retail, which is absolutely huge now. We've got out-of-town shopping, and we've also got the retreat of bank branches and the shift to remove work.
No, to remote work.
Shift to remote work, I beg your pardon. You know, if you look at the bank branches even, you know, you toddle along to your branch to cash a check or whatever. We're all doing that now online anyway. And there's hardly any movement in the places where there would have been movement. And what they are suggesting overall, and not just for Bray, obviously, but for the entire country, is that we should get on to regeneration in terms of converting the retail and the dead space into homes, services and community uses. And that does seem to be the way forward. I mean, Germany have taken this very seriously. And what they've actually done is they've gone in and they have insisted that if retail cannot survive any longer, that this is turned into homes, into housing. Yeah,
that's the solution.
And
now, at a high level, that is the solution. But difficult to get there, Declan.
Difficult to get there. It's it's interesting because if you start turning either the above the shop, which there is some grants available, as far as I know, for that as well, into accommodation, or even some of the ground floor units into residential, it brings more people. More people brings more opportunity for different types of businesses.
Commerce.
So it's a sort of a vicious circle there on that as well. There's also a bit of technicality stuff going on. I mean, the definition of dereliction versus vacancy and seems a little bit grey, as Valerie said. They really need to get their act together on that as well. And I think that vibrancy of bringing people back into the towns, though maybe the community uses, and maybe some incentive as well to actually use the properties as pop-up units and maybe give some tax breaks on that or some other incentive to help landlords and indeed operators.
Like even having students or having tourists or people, it's just, you know, if you can have as many mixes of different categories, they'll all bring their own vibrancy.
I think the whole thing is to bring them back into use. And there's a very interesting piece in this article. A local resident in Bray, Kieran Hogan, he's actually been chronicling the changes on Main Street for the last 7 years. And it's quite scary. I mean, favourite bakeries, cafes, all sorts of little shops that offered lunches, they're all gone.
Yeah.
And, you know, that takes the life out of the town as well.
Yeah, well, we'll follow this series with interest because it's of particular interest to this show. We're going to be looking at Donegal, Roscommon, there's a couple of other counties as well.
One final thing on it, Bobby, maybe, is that I would encourage people in places like Bray, in other words, is to use it or you will lose it.
Correct.
Because if unless you support these local businesses, you know, that will mean that they will close. Yeah. So maybe not always buy it online.
No.
Maybe go down to the local retailer, you know, maybe go
shop
out for
local.
Yeah.
Shop
well,
local.
When Marks and
Spencer's
closed in Dunleary, somebody said to me, oh, it's a shame that Marks closed in Dunleary. I said, when were you last in there?
Exactly.
You know, really, when were you last there?
But Bobby, Declan mentioned there, you know, when is something derelict? When do you call it dereliction? And I think if you have ivy grown out of the roof and you've got smashed windows and you've got rats running around, I think it's derelict.
Probably.
Declan, what about what you're, this is a great piece about from Sumaya Keynes. About what your out of office really means. I loved this.
Yeah.
So you read between the lines when you send somebody an email and you get an out of office reply. There are various different ones that tell an awful lot about the said individual. Tell us more.
Well, I had a good laugh reading this, Bobby, because it's so, so true. And I was looking to see which one was me. And apparently, I'm the one who says, I'm out until such a date. And if you need to talk to somebody, talk to my colleague. So apparently, what that really means is revenge. So can I publicly apologise to Barry and Sarah for that? But it is great. I mean, there's some there where, you know, the sort of French look or the French way, you know, away for the summer. This is definitely a French person. It's okay to resent them. After all, they have a nicer time than you. So there's some really good ones there.
I'm away from my desk and we'll be checking emails intermittently. This person is on holidays with their in-laws and wants to reply to your mail within 17 minutes rather than the usual 6. They also have an addiction, but see it as a strength. What ones did you like, Valerie?
Well, you know, it's interesting that they're actually calling it an addiction, that you have to get back to your phone and answer it, you know. But the one I really liked was, I'm on holiday with no access to internet or phone signal. In case I do get access to those, I've smashed my phone, laptop and smartwatch and thrown them into the ocean. And apparently this is actually a cry for help from someone with a severe addiction. And you're supposed to pity them as you absentmindedly check your phone for social media notifications and whatever. And your new favourite, new stories on the FT app.
Well, my favourite one is, I'm off this morning and yes. I'll be back this afternoon. Yeah. This out-of-office message is entirely unnecessary and the sender knows it. By littering your inbox with their email detritus, they're demonstrating that they're the type to scroll through Instagram reels without headphones on a train. God, we hate those people.
But you should have two phones, you see, and leave your work phone at home when you go on holidays and just take your family phone.
Well, finally then, Valerie, I know this is going to get you exercised because the couple that strengthened their bond by exercising together, the couple that exercise together, stay together. Do you buy into this?
This, Bobby, I have to say, having studied it carefully, it's a load of rubbish. Scientists are saying the secret to a successful marriage could be working out together. Now, I suspect that this survey was sponsored by a gym. But it's an absolute load of rubbish. First of all, you start exercising with your partner, right? First of all, that is creating sheer competition between you that you do not need. There are rows over who's going to mind the kids while you go exercising. Then you're going to have rows over your partner's possible interest in other lycra-clad humans. There is more opportunity for arguments while you're all breathless and sweaty and say, no, no, it was your turn to put out the bins. No, 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 you're making the dinner. And ultimately, divorce. So you're not strengthening any bonds.
I can think of nothing worse than exercising with my wife. And she obviously thinks the same, I would suggest.
Declan, Bobby, where are you on this? I think there's not much more to say to this, what Valerie's saying, but only just maybe to hark back to simpler times. The family that prays together stays together.
Yeah, and I also like to split the difference between what is exercise and, like, going for a walk with your partner is different than exercising in a gym.
Well, they're including that in this
article. Yeah, but they shouldn't be because they're two different things.
A little forest walk or something.
Yeah. All right, we'll leave it there. Thanks to my guests, Valerie Cox, Declan Ralph. Great to see you both in such fine form this morning and enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Thank you, Bobby.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr. Sponsored by Bank of Ireland. Saturday morning at 8. News Talk. Conversation that counts.